From New Orleans, this is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. David Simon is equal parts journalist and dramatist. He's produced 3 critically acclaimed television shows about Baltimore. And as executive producer of the HBO series Tremé, Simon took on New Orleans after the flood.
In essence, the story that we were trying to tell with Tremé was it was something that we didn't have room for in The Wire, and which I think is sort of essential, which is an argument for what the American city can achieve in terms of creating community and society.
Join us for one of our favorite interviews from 2013. David Simon, after the break.
New Orleans is the rebirth brass band. New Orleans is trombone shorty. The Neville Brothers.
Anyone who's been following life in New Orleans since the levees failed in 2005 can name the most reliable sources for news of the city. And for 4 seasons, music lovers in New Orleans could entrust their story to David Simon and the team behind HBO's Tremé. Why? Because sometimes news is best delivered by poets. The tradition began during antiquity. Ancient Greece and Rome had any number of epic poems that sorted through the headlines of the day. Fast forward a couple thousand years and substitute a television series for ancient paper and pen, and the similarities are uncanny. As a newsman and artist, David Simon captures the life and times of entire cities. First, Baltimore, in the highly acclaimed dramas Homicide, Life on the Street, The Corner, and The Wire.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, you'll save your soul. Gotta keep the devil down in the hole.
His story of post-Katrina New Orleans unfolds in an even more lyrical way via the city's musicians.
Hanging in a Tremé, watching people sashay, past my steps, by my
David Simon joined us at Elephant Quilt Studios at the end of 2013, just before the series finale. But he hesitated to describe Tremé as journalism.
That's really overly kind. and I'm not sure I agree with the notion that anything we've done has been news. I was a journalist for so long, a newspaperman in Baltimore, that I have such regard for journalism that I wouldn't claim that mantle for what I do.
That's so interesting. You should say that. You know, I was also in news for many years. And, you know, what I came to believe is that you almost have to inform people against their will in journalism.
Sometimes.
And
that's
so
true.
You have to be really cunning and find ways to first capture people's attention and then make them pay attention to you without ever realizing that they're learning something in the process. And that can, you know, that's a very artful process. Artful in the sense of a con and artful in the sense of actual art.
Well, in a sense, all narrative is a con.
Yes.
In that you're constructing, if you're trying to pursue that which is true or truth on some grand scale, it's elusive from the moment that you begin to decide you're going to tell a story with a beginning and a middle and an end, because you know, real life events are often random and disconnected, and creating a narrative is almost a false premise.
Exactly.
I mean, you can deconstruct anything. On the other hand, stories are, you know, sometimes stories happen to be reflective of some truth. And it's up to people to decide how much they are and how hyperbolic they are. But I'm a storyteller. I've become that. And I think the best that could be said is that my impulses are still the same. I still am interested in the same things I was when I was a reporter. I'm interested in political argument, social argument, economic argument. I'm interested in the argument.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is contained within Tremé or The Wire an argument.
Absolutely.
About who we are, where we're going. You can compare it to an op-ed piece, maybe some grand, overly expensive.
It's a mighty pretty op-ed piece, I can tell you that.
Well, you know, but that's all it is. I mean, there are plenty of other arguments to be had.
Yeah, I've always believed that the best storytelling includes, you know what I mean, a cogent understanding of facts, and the best journalism is all about a great understanding of storytelling.
Yeah, and some distance and time, because. You know, when I was covering the police beat in Baltimore, my first couple of years, it was just reactive. You know, it was police said, this happened yesterday, that kind of stuff, you know. And it took years before I was able to understand that, you know, maybe the dope on the table wasn't the story. Maybe there was something else to pay attention to. And that was just time. That was staying inert on the beat for long enough so that you don't get fooled the same way twice.
That's exactly right.
And you know, in New Orleans, what we had was... You know, Eric Overmyer, George Pelicanos, and certainly the writers from New Orleans that we hired were attentive to the city on some level even before the storm. I mean, we'd been coming here and Eric lived here. But more than that, we had a period of 3-4 years before the show went on the air where we could pay very close attention to what had happened or not happened since Katrina.
I had read a long time ago that when you first made your pitch to create Tremé, that you actually sent along a document as well as a playlist of songs that you said must be listened to as the
when
person
you got
read.
When you got to the part in the script where there was some music in the pilot, listen to the music. It's not just a song.
Coming back more fearless, more determined, focused, set. I ain't even started yet. So if you ain't ready, you better get ready. Know I do it better when I'm being opposed. I stick your chest, I keep the chin up. It's a time to got to get knocked down to get up. You keep bumping me against the wall. Yeah, I know I let the side fall. But until you see me, trust me.
You ain't seen what's back. You know, something about New Orleans that you can't explain to people who haven't been here is the participatory nature of culture, is that, you know, a parade is not something that you watch pass by. It's something you get into, and you are the second line. The interaction between a band and the audience in a club is much more participatory than it is in other places. You know, the street food, the Indians, everything is in the street. In essence, the story that we were trying to tell with Tremé was something that we didn't have room for in The Wire, which I think is sort of essential, which is an argument for what the American city can achieve in terms of creating community and society. In New Orleans, it's so apparent to me that so little worked after the storm as it should have, except culture.
Let me take you back, actually, to the playlist. What did you put on that playlist?
Originally? Oh, what was in the pilot? I mean, there was, I guess the first song was Feel Like Funkin' It Up by Rebirth.
The Rebirth Brass Band. Yeah.
I feel like pulling it up, yeah, like pulling it up.
wanted to, have people in L.A. who were considering the show to hear a brass band, because the script is only the script, and I kind of wanted people to hear what was possible. A lot of people, if they have a sense of a New Orleans brass band, it's probably lodged in about 1947, and, they're playing Nearer My God to Thee, or...
That's right.
Closer Walk with Thee, and what had happened, the revolution in brass band music began with Dirty Dozen and is now in its third or fourth generation, taking R&B and hip-hop and making it into street music.
That's the Rebirth Brass Band with Feel Like Funkin' It Up. Coming up, David Simon on Real American Values, New Orleans Style, which includes sequins, feathers, and some of the prettiest men you ever saw. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're listening to pianist Tom McDermott on the soundtrack of the HBO series Tremé. After a 4-year run, Tremé wrapped up, with the city and the main characters doing better than when the show began. Executive producer David Simon says that even when the city was on its knees, New Orleans was still doing what New Orleans does best.
New Orleans is a factory town, and its factory it manufactures moments.
Yes.
And it's actually skilled labor, and very underpaid for its skill set. But it's New Orleans. It's something different than the rest of America.
The storyline of Tremé began when every moment counted. Most of the city was still empty, and its residents were desperate. That's why in the first episode, the character Albert Lambreau is so hell-bent on salvaging his water-ravaged bar for Mardi Gras Indian practice. Lambreau is the big chief of the Guardians of the Flame, and Mardi Gras Indians practice all year round for just a few appearances on the streets of New Orleans. Their glittering textiles, their street parading, and their chants represent an unbroken cultural tradition in the city. But Lambreau, played by actor Clark Peters, needs his neighbor's help. So he dons last year's regalia to pay his neighbor a visit in the night. And boy, is he pretty.
How the big chief! Guardians of the Flame, Mardi Gras Day, I shoot the fire in the name. I make Lulu Dewey Dewey Bachi Bum Bow. I make them jump over St. Louis Cemetery, roll that lightning, kick down the tombstones, wake up the dead and make a hum bow. I'm looking for a trail thief.
Ain't nobody home. Ain't nobody even thinking about no kneeling tread. Some of them houses still got bodies up in there.
Boom, bow. Don't know how.
All right. Put your suit away, Chief. I'll be around by the bar tomorrow afternoon.
That was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen on screen.
And the big yellow feathers.
Big Chief
with last year's suit.
And chanting. If anybody showed up with in Mardi Gras as a Mardi Gras Indian at my doorstep, I don't think I could deny that person anything.
And you can't. No, you can't. And I think the reaction on part of a lot of America was, who's the guy dressed like Big Bird? There was a little bit of like, what was that about? Because again, it wasn't explained. We were holding back on the explanation purposely. We said, there's more here than why don't you stay with us? Why don't you find out what this is about?
It's funny because early on in the launch of our program, Lynette Johnson, who's a co-creator of the show, were standing out just outside this building here in Marigny, Elephant Quilt Studios. Mm. And it was very dark. And all of a sudden in the distance, we saw something glittering. And then it came forward and it was a Mardi Gras Indian quietly making his way back home.
Seeing an Indian at night on the street organically, like there's nothing like it. It's almost as if the world is muted in color while this apparition comes out of the, you know, to see it come from between two shotgun houses and, you know,
yes,
turn next to a rusting car and come towards you, and this you know, astonishing creature, this ridiculous beauty.
Yeah, resplendent and
yeah,
all of this beautiful sequence and feathers.
And to see it, like it, to see it in the context of a real city is amazing.
There is no more self-referential city in the United States than New Orleans. We sing about ourselves. We sing about,
right.
We talk about ourselves right. constantly. Most sentences begin with, well, in New Orleans, you know,
right.
and all. And yet, you know, it was surreal to sit down all these years and watch a program in which you see carousels of images and ideas that are true and fictional at the same time, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I you know.
Which is a cheat, which is just a cheat.
It's a very valuable one.
There's no other way to do it.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I saw my nurse practitioner, you know what I mean, on Trey, and she's playing herself,
right.
you know? And this is, but what's happening is that you are borrowing or benefiting from the credibility of all of these individuals, the musicians, the nurse practitioner,
absolutely.
The people around.
And the chefs.
And the chefs, exactly.
The cultural community. They rallied pretty quickly once they realized what we were doing and said, you know what? And they put away a lot of the sort of the local fratricidal.
Yes.
You know, that guy owes me $2,000 for this gig where I wasn't, you know, that stuff. Like, I won't be in a scene with him because, you know, this one song, he, you know.
Right.
It's like, that stuff disappeared pretty quickly for the vast majority of people. And we got them to participate in the fraud. And in doing so, made it a little bit more real.
Absolutely.
Because they kicked in. And that's everybody from, like, real high-end, you know, national presence people like, you know, Dr. John or Toussaint or down to you know, the freshest, youngest brass band.
Absolutely. I'm sorry. You've got a scene featuring Fats Domino in his house.
Oh, my God.
Singing Blueberry Hill.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill, when I was drinking beer, the monster still on Blueberry Hill.
To get him to do that.
Exactly.
Like, at first it was like, you can come over. I'm not sure I'm going to get near the piano. And I'm definitely not singing. So, like, it, you know, and all credit to Vel Crawford.
To Vel Crawford, yes.
For charming him into walking over to the piano.
He's a great piano player himself, right?
I mean, you know, and Devel, you know, showed fealty and respect to who Fats is, the journey is worth it alone just for those 60 seconds.
That's right.
You know, or there's two or three other moments like that of
Give us an example.
Sugar Boy Crawford singing gospel.
Yes.
With Devel.
That's his grandfather. That's Sugar Boy Crawford?
Sugar Boy Crawford in the flesh.
My dad will bury me.
Lionel, Mr. Furbus, having him on camera was wonderful.
A centenarian.
Yeah.
Traditional jazz
talking
player.
Talking about his craft.
You've been gigging for what?
80 some odd years.
Woo! Dang.
Fred Roosevelt gave me a job.
See, Mr. Furbus joined the WPA band. His first trumpet.
There's something to be said for doing one thing right.
We felt like we honored the stories we were trying to tell about actual people. They were not hyperbolic. They were not gangsters. They were not politicians or national politicians walking in the West Wing. They were not doctors in an emergency room. They were ordinary people. And to the extent they weren't ordinary, they were culture bearers, which is something that doesn't really get a lot of currency in TV. New Orleans delivers on the idea of community in a way that's, you can film it.
Yes. There comes a point where if you're working as a reporter or as a journalist in any field, you realize that the story you're working on, no matter how complicated, is really just one pixel a much larger image.
That's a really perfect way of saying it. And that's the power of the city. It does offer these intense cultural forces that are affirming of community.
Oh, absolutely.
And, I was disappointed with The Wire in its reception in one sense. A lot of people, they looked at it, and if I heard this once, I heard it a dozen times. It was, well, why don't they leave? That town is screwed up. It's like, this notion that urban America is not our fate and our certainty and our hope in the sense of, we're not going back to a rural people. Real American values are now city values. And we're either going to live or die by how we function in these multicultural, increasingly compacted areas.
You were down here before the storm. You're down here, obviously covering the city after the storm. Are there any lyrics that have come to be an inspiration to you, or at least something that frames your argument well?
We made it through that water.
Oh, boy, is that a good one,
what an anthem.
Huh?
What an anthem.
Yeah.
Those guys, that hit that one out of the park.
The Free Agents Brass Band reimagined the old Negro spiritual, Wade in the Water, and made the song true to an entirely different experience. Here's We Made It Through That Water.
That bridge, so let's get it how we live. That's why we did what we did. When I lost my city, almost lost my mind. In and out of hotels, feel like I'm doing time. Please, Mr. Officer, don't shoot, cause I ain't eating this. I was stuck up on that roof, ain't trying to make an excuse, but they running from the truth. We know they blew them levers, man, but we ain't got no proof. Whatever they do, I can't turn my back. I was born righteous, so righteous where I'm at. Send them troops home, let daddy to San Iraq, and tell FEMA we gon' need more than 10 stacks. Wherever you at, St. Bernard to the Cali, yo. One time, do it big for De Niro. H-Town all the way to the A. We appreciate the love, but my people can't stay. We the men's way.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, if HBO's Tremé failed to draw significant popular interest nationwide, does it mean that the nation doesn't care about New Orleans? David Simon has a theory. Stay tuned. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. As the HBO series Tremé entered its fourth and final season, we talked with co-creator and executive producer David Simon. He relied heavily on musicians to tell the story of post-Katrina New Orleans. Here's singer-songwriter Steve Earle.
This city won't wash away. This city won't ever drown. Blood and water and hell to pay. Sky tear open and pain rain down. The medics come when they. I ever won't leave this town. This city won't wash away. This city won't ever drown.
You know, Steve Earle said something that, you know, he said, there are people in New Orleans who they're okay in New Orleans. You know, like they'll make it, you know. But if they can't make it in New Orleans, God help them, because the rest of the world would kill them.
That matter, cause ain't no way I'm ever gonna leave this town. This city won't wash away. This city won't ever drown.
There is something hermetically safe about this city if you're an artist, or if you're opinionated, or if you're idiosyncratic.
Yes.
This city has a very high tolerance for idiosyncratic.
It's true.
And God bless it for that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would say it's an export, but it's not exactly.
No, it doesn't travel.
No,
so
it
well.
Doesn't. Like the food. It doesn't travel well.
Yeah. New Orleans food doesn't travel well, and the idiosyncrasy of the town doesn't travel. You know, not only do you not get it, but you won't get it if we try to travel with it. I mean, let's be honest. You know, we weren't a very popular show.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, part of it is because the currencies that work in television, which is a mass medium, are violence and sex and comedy. Those three
we
things.
We got that?
No. I mean, we didn't. Yeah, we were offering an hour-long drama, so there were some funny bits, but you know, we were not selling a half hour,
right?
You know? And we were not selling a crime story, and we were not or hyperbolic violence. We had as much violence as we thought conveyed New Orleans, and we were selling about as much sex as we thought the characters, you know, would be relevant to the character's journey. So we weren't using any currencies that work in television. And we, you know, if you think about the number of shows that are about ordinary people, I mean, you can narrow it on one hand.
It's
over
so
the last
true.
30 years.
It's so true. And then what I like also about Tremé is that you break that conceit in a lot of television drama of today, especially where, you know, how you have all these cop dramas, crime dramas, and when a police officer goes to visit someone and ask some questions, interview that person about a crime, in all these other dramas, you see the people walking around as if the cops come to their house every day, or they come to their office every day to talk to them about murder or rape or whatever, and it's so false. I mean, you know, the truth is, if a police officer, no matter whether you like the police or not, comes to you to ask you questions, you don't make the officer walk with you, you know, 100 yards before you say, I gotta go, bye.
Yeah, they're just trying to make the scenes different. And,
exactly.
And every week they're doing a police procedural. So
yes.
The procedure is what matters. They, it's the journey to the arrest.
That's right.
Listen, there's a lot of different things that work in TV. That they're not all, you know, I'm not going to complain about gangster stories when I did one effectively in Baltimore. But, you know, we knew what we were up against selling this. And then further, we were going at the pace of sort of real post-Katrina life, which means by standards of television drama, we're going slow.
Yeah.
You know, by standards of real life, these characters actually go on great journeys, you know. The chef has three restaurants in four and a half years.
That's right.
But by standards of television, it's a snail's pace. So we think that, you know, if you look back on it, if somebody picks it up off the shelf and watches these 35 hours, at some point, we think they will find something very real, and they will find something compelling in the journeys of these characters. But to watch it in real time, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it really doesn't work to catch 1 hour for 10 Sundays and then wait a year. You know, and there's something else going on, which is, this was very telling. We came on the air about 4 years after Katrina, when people in New Orleans, our characters, are talking with the anger and abandon that people had here.
Yes.
3 months after the storm. And you literally heard critics say, why don't they stop whining?
Really?
From the first few, I mean, yeah, like, you know, the Creighton Burnett rant, which was, of course, taken from a local blogger here.
This was The Academic, played by John Goodman?
Yeah, his rant in front of the cameras. I mean, it was actually the language of 3 months after the storm.
Absolutely. Find the responsible parties and put them on trial. Corps of Engineers, federal, state, local government, the contractors who use substandard materials, and the goddamn sleazebag politicians that they have in their pockets.
Ah, so, given that it's all gone pear-shaped, why should the American taxpayer foot the bill to fix New Orleans? It's going to cost billions.
Well, since when don't nations rebuild their great cities?
For the sake of argument, let's say New Orleans was once a great city.
Are you saying New Orleans is not a great city? A city that lives in the imagination of the world?
Huh. I suppose if you're a fan of the music, which has rather seen its day, let's be honest, or the food, a provincial cuisine which many would say is typically American, too fat, too rich, then yes, of course, New Orleans has its advocates. But what about the rest of the country?
Provincial, passé, hate the food, hate the music, hate the city. What the f*** are you doing down here? You and limey vulture.
His rants in the pilot were actual dialogue taken from, you know, some notable voices.
Boy. Here
and yet, if you go back, you know, you look at, particularly in the sort of the media centers of New York and L.A., it was like, oh, get over yourself.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And like, you know, guys, what do you think you sounded like 3 months after 9/11? What do you think it was like to talk to a New Yorker? And with good cause. I was in Tribeca, hearing everybody straining this extraordinary trauma through their own personal narrative.
Yes.
It was understandable. There was insight in it, and there was also, you know, sort of the usual self-absorption, but it was all mixed in, and you had to listen. And it was good to listen. And that was a very traumatic and a very violent thing that happened to New York. But New Orleans lost 80% of its infrastructure.
Exactly.
80% of the city was wiped out. People were talking about it all the time. And so to hear people say, as they're saying now, you know, the characters are not so angry anymore, and they're not so self-referential, and they're sort of getting on with life, and I like them better.
It's like, really?
Oh, good for you. Good for you. You know, you might want to check that empathy because it's running a little low. You know, the levels of your empathy are kind of down at the bottom there.
Sure. It's almost, I have to say, it's almost as if Katrina would have played better in Europe or among European.
Oh,
because they have experienced the loss of cities or the near loss post-war. You go to Warsaw, for instance, and Warsaw still hasn't recovered.
Right.
You know what I mean? From World War II.
I think, yeah, there's certainly been more 20th century trauma in Europe than in America. For, you know, to compare to this, you'd have to look as far back as the San Francisco earthquake.
Exactly. You know, there's a very evocative scene in an episode in season 3 of Tremé where you have the character whose name is Annie, who's played by whom?
Lucia Micarelli.
Yes, and she performs with the Neville Brothers at an event in Washington, D.C. And they're performing the Randy Newman standard, Louisiana 1927, which is a beautiful song no matter what you're doing. And but no one in the room, or very few people in the room, seemed particularly interested. And this was Washington.
They were busy politicking.
exactly. They were
we
busy
made sure the audience wasn't digging it.
And making money because they were, you know, they were right. networking to get the contracts so that they could right. rebuild the city.
Right.
But they didn't really care so much about the yeah. culture or the tragedy.
We all ran. And it rained for a beautiful time. 6 feet of water in the streets of the lower one.
That song about the 27 flood, it has that great communal conclusion where he's singing over and over, they're trying to wash us away.
Yes.
Us being the, they're trying to wash us away. And of course, that flood was, you know, genuinely a natural disaster, unlike Katrina, which was, you know, largely an engineering failure. But there was an element of engineering failure there with the Corps of Engineers in 1927, and that they got rid of all the spillways.
Yes.
And they believed that if they forced all the water down the river, you know, like a shotgun towards New Orleans, it would dig out the bottom of the river and it would never override the levees, which of course was wrong. But the thing about that was it gave us, very ironically, Herbert Hoover.
Yes.
Who led the Red Cross effort and got Coolidge grudgingly to contribute to that effort and so therefore made a name for himself. And then, of course, was in charge of the country in 1932, where you needed to instill hope in a huge way when the banks were failing and when the economy had ground to a halt. And he didn't, you know, he was not large enough for it.
So was yeah. Coolidge the little fat man in the song? Hey, little fat man, isn't it a
shame? No, there was a guy next, there was a little fat man with a notepad in his hand next to Coolidge. But Cool Cal, I think, has the line about what the river has done to this poor cracker's land.
Yeah, isn't it a shame?
Isn't it a shame?
What a river
yeah,
has
he
done.
Was, you know, that was Coolidge.
John Boutte has made that song his own, you know, Louisiana 1927, yeah. and did so in a spontaneous performance, you know, at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival right the year after the storm.
6 feet of water in the streets of the Lower Nine.
Exactly. Yeah. And boy, you know, it was genius on his part, you know, to yeah. alter the lyrics to that song.
Did he do that first, or did Aaron Neville do it on that televised special?
Well, Boutte did it in such a way that I don't remember Aaron Neville.
All right, well, you take that up with Aaron when you see him.
Because he brought humor to the situation, Boutte, as well as outrage, as yeah. well as sorrow. And it was just a beautiful combination, you know?
Listen here, break it down, y'all. Come. President Bush, y'all, flew over in an airplane. With about 12 fat men with double martinis in their hands. President Bush said, great job, great job. What the levee has done, what the levee has done to this poor Creole's land. Louisiana, sing with me, hey. Louisiana.
John Boutte talks about his experience with you all, Blake Lay, your music supervisor, and he'll say, this is what he said just a few weeks ago, they're so fair. Those people, they're so fair.
All you have to do is actually pay New Orleans musicians for their work, and you get a reputation for fairness. What does that say about the music industry?
Tell me about it.
I mean, I gotta say, you know, I'm in the film and television industry, and we like to think we're a bunch of, you know, scalawags and rogues when it comes to, you know, the deal and the money, and, you know, we are nothing. We are pikers compared to the music industry. I've never been more astonished at the
of how much for how little.
How
huh?
Yeah, you know, it's that old line about, you know, this. The fights are so ruthless because the stakes are so small.
That's very true.
You know, it's not why we did the show. But one of the side benefits was, you know, having $1 million a season in song rights and performance payments go out. You know, the checks go out from Time Warner. and land in this community that, you know, there are less venues to play in, and people lost everything, and it felt like a lanyap. That was lanyap.
Very good. And so, are there any storylines that you would have liked to have plumbed before the end of this series?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we had hoped to go. Originally, we thought about 5 seasons, and it turned out that we were traveling the arc of the characters at a better clip than 5. So, we started looking at 4 seasons as being optimum. And then the 4th season, you know, we were given enough money to do 5 episodes. So we did about half of the season. The way we solved that was by starting the last season later, you know, so that we would still end at Mardi Gras. But there were story elements that we could only imply. LaDonna is out of her marriage, and you don't see the dissolution of her marriage. You just see that she's
with
Big Chief Lambro.
And that actress, Candy Alexander, boy, that's a force of nature right there.
Yeah, force of nature is a good way of saying it, yeah.
I'm in business to fill this place. It sounds like you're about to bring me paying customers. So if you don't think I can handle a little Sunday night throwdown, then you don't know who the f*** I am.
She's a presence, you know, she really is. Very interesting to write for her.
Now sit down, son. I want to look up at you while we're working this out.
There were certain storylines that we couldn't pursue with the same deliberation that we wanted. For example, Sonny, I think, got short shrift last season. And that,
remind us who Sonny is.
Sonny is the musician. He came from Europe. As some,
the Dutchman.
Yeah, as some musicians do and have come to New Orleans for precisely for the culture. And we painted him as a workaday, competent but not exceptional musician whose just rewards are commensurate with that. We kind of wanted to show people who, you know, not everybody is a maestro. His journey was to reconcile with that. There was a reason that we wanted to have him working at the musician's clinic and sort of giving something back now that he's sort of past the addictive impulse and the self-absorption and the pity. And sort of looking at his life and looking at what's good about his life and what's good about being in New Orleans and sober, in his case. By the way, the scene of him in an AA meeting on Mardi Gras Day,
yes,
with all those guys in costumes, which is, by the way, that's where they have AA meetings.
The Lambda House.
Yeah. It was just like, yes, you know, there is a guy sitting one row behind him dressed like a cockroach, you know, reciting the 12 steps. And if you don't think that's real for New Orleans, then you don't know the city.
You know,
That was just dead. When we filmed that, I was just beside myself. I just felt like, thank you, God. But, you know, so, there was a lot to be said for how Sonny ended up and his journey. And I just, you know, 5 episodes, it was, you know, what do they say? It was 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. You know?
And so, you know, the truth is the latest Katrina casualty is Tremé in the mindset of the people here. I mean, this HBO series meant something to the people here because it was the most loving form of listening to the people here.
For some people. I mean, I think there are people who had a hard time with it. It was either reliving things that they weren't particularly interested in reliving, or if you happen to be a dentist from Lakeview or an accountant from Gentilly or a plumber. A plumber from the 7th Ward or whatever, it might not have been your story. And everybody after Katrina had a story.
Yes.
And I don't want to disrespect that by claiming more for Tremé than it deserves. It dealt with what it dealt with, but it didn't deal with everybody's post-Katrina experience, nor would it have been successful if it had tried. Everybody's experience post-Katrina from New Orleans was pretty profound.
Okay. And I'm treating this as a death, you know, the HBO series Tremé.
Oh, don't. I mean, you know, 35 hours for a story about culture bears on TV.
Well, I was sorry when MASH ended. You know, MASH was on for 10 years.
I mean, you know, it's the best job in television.
It is. You know? Okay, well, so, what's your playlist for the end, though? What's your playlist for the end of your experience in this town? You know, let's say we're going down to the cemetery and we're coming back.
What?
You know how in a jazz funeral, you go down to the cemetery in the second line and you're singing one type of song, and then you cut the body loose.
Oh, yeah.
And then on the way back, you sing a whole different song.
What do I want to hear now as we listen? I'm not going anywhere. You know, I have a house in New Orleans, and Eric has a house in New Orleans. And the only difference for me now is I get to be a civilian again. I get to go to the clubs, and this time I have to pay honest cover, and I pay for my drinks. That's the downside. The upside is I get to stay and listen to the music.
So let me ask you this, David Simon. What song would you like us to go out on?
You know, I have a place in my heart. We went out on the pilot on Little Queenie's...
New Orleans?
My Darling New Orleans. There's something about her voice... And hearing that sort of high-pitched, starting with the Indian chants, if you come down on Mardi Gras Day, you might hear the Wild Chapatula say. There's something about that song. It really captures the abandon in which people lose themselves in this town. There's something about the way she talks about the town. And it's not the pure, idealized tourist version of New Orleans. It's an insider's view by the end. But there's something about that song I love. So, you know, I don't know that that's for after we cut the body loose, but I think it's a good ending.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Sure.
I'm going to tell you in the words of the people at the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, thank you so much for your contribution.
Oh, very kind.
David Simon is executive producer of HBO's Tremé. We spoke with him at Elephant Quilt Studios in New Orleans just before the series ended in 2014. Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Sean Collins, Matt Aguiluz, and Jason Rhine. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. For a complete playlist of the songs played during the hour, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, the Arts Council New Orleans, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.
Yeah.
place to kiss. I'm in Caracas.